allies to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, for 27 years. And we are welcoming indefatigable Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, We Can. Osprey works internationally with grassroots, BIPOC and Indigenous leaders, policymakers, and diverse coalitions to build climate justice, resilient communities, and a just transition to a decentralized, democratized, clean energy future. Her credits go on forever. Her latest book that we be honoring and proffering for a pledge of $150 donation is The Story Is in Our Bones, How Worldviews and Climate Justice Can Remake a World in Crisis. It's time to rewild ourselves and our dominant worldviews to build Earth-centered communities for all. And it goes on wonderfully. Her website is Osprey Oriel, two L's, lake.earth. So welcome, Osprey Oriel Lake.
Thank you. So good to be here with you.
Well, so the last time we met was around a fire on the Hotel Terrace during the Bioneers Conference. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a marvelous mini colonial moment when the waitress came over to us around the fire having a great time, and she said, there's a couple who would like to sit around the fire. And we said, well, welcome, we can make room. And the waitress said, no, the couple wants you all to move and to leave so they can be here. And we're like, No. They're welcome. We're happy to give relationship counseling, but you know, what is that? But I just thought that was just a priceless little colonial moment. No, we would like to sit around. Welcome, you can join us. No, we want you to go. So that's sort of the history of the world right there, right?
Yeah, no, I think you've got it in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, so let's imagine that we and all of our dedicated ally listeners are around that storytelling fire, because you have so many stories to tell. And there's so much... you know, the book is divinatory, you know, and there's much that we want to, you know, honor living forest, Amazon, and, you know, and also it's a magic book, because I was just thinking as I was reading along early about Berta Cáceres, and I turned the page and there she is. I was at the Goldman Awards when she won in 2015, just a wonderful, wonderful human Honduran environmentalist. Assassinated in her house on March 2nd, 2016. And just to weave us to her, I'll say it astrologically, but translate it immediately. So when she died, Mars was at 28 Scorpio, whose image is indigenous woman pleads for the life of her children. I go, whoa. And Neptune, dreams and vision, was at 9 degrees Pisces, and Saturn is there right now. So we are dedicated to her vision, because the image for that as we gather around is, you know, aviator, master of the high realms, sails across the skies, putting in place projects that will benefit the next seven generations. So here we are. Mm. And that was in her death chart moment. And we go, oh, okay.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's all connected, right? So I love Palestinian poet, mentor, extraordinary man, Rafat Al-Arir, who was assassinated by the Israeli cult. But he was giving a TED talk, and when he said, when colonizers, you know, approached native people here in America, who said, when the colonizers said, this is our land and we will divvy it up, and indigenous people said back, if this is your land, tell me your stories. Tell me your stories from the land. And he said the answer was silence, because they had no stories from the land.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought was powerful, because here your wonderful book is many stories from the land, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, thank you for pulling all those threads together. And I think that, you know, one of the main themes that I'm getting at in the book is this need for a new narrative that really connects us deeply to our ecologies on the lands where we live. And as you know so well, and in your introduction about colonization, how complex that is, not complicated. Like, we can do this, but it is complex, and we need to really endeavor to understand that, along with a lot of our political activities, that our relationship to the land and the original peoples of the land are part of our political activity. So knowing where we live on the indigenous lands where we live, acknowledging that we're on stolen lands, acknowledging that reparations are needed, acknowledging that, you know, we need to reread these stories of both our own ancestries, wherever we're from originally, and then be very humble and sit at the feet of indigenous peoples who are intact, and to really respect their traditional ecological knowledge and their rights and their sovereignty, and to support that while we're also really learning to do our own healing processes if we're from, you know, the dominant culture and are not connected immediately to our ancestral roots. You know, how do we really do the homework inside to present ourselves so that we don't show up, as you just mentioned, in the conversation with no stories? Because we have those stories. They're in our bones. They're in our, they may be in our traditions in some way. There is ways to research this. And it's time that we do that homework and come sitting not as empty ghosts, but people who have really a story to offer, even if it's tattered and torn.
Yes. Well, I love your book. The story is in our bones for many, many reasons. You know, anything anywhere is everywhere. And many have said recently settler colonialism is in its last days, but more brutal and desperate. And we go, right, that's true. And then part of my rejoicing as I've read your book is astro-mythology guiding Cosmovision. The huge thing being proffered to us this year is what's called the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in Taurus, the land, the stories from the land and the innovation from the land, which will, it's all year, but it's April 21st. And it says, okay, humans, decolonize imagination. It's the Thai saying, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. Right, participatory animism, which permeates your book as though everything's alive. And and then just to say, you know, Uranus, part of all of us, insists on equality, you know, speciesism into the cauldron, chosen people into the cauldron, you know, all equal. And so I was rejoicing reading your book, and I am happy to tout it to our listeners as so humming with pertinent resonance to the opportunities before us while deeply addressing the dangers, right? Because it's like, this is how we got to go. And so many references and wonderful friends throughout your book. A segue from Max Dashu last week and her liberating the goddess Nemesis that we think of as an enemy. And it's like, no, Nemesis was the inexorable justice of divine law to all who violate the order of nature. She's one who gives what is due. And we go, yeah, oh, let's call her in. Absolutely. Let's call her in. And the power of memory that we're going to honor in your book. And here we are all in the vast field of grief all around us that we want to honor. There's Berta. I remember after she was assassinated at the Goldman Awards, many of her colleagues took the stage and they did this beautiful dance chanting song, and they said, Berta did not die, she multiplied. Mm-hmm, it was so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have yeah, such, and I...
Yeah. Yeah, you go.
No, I was also thinking also about how, you know, as part of that movement, the saying from the Global South also started getting rejuvenated, that they didn't realize when they buried us, we were seeds. And so, you know, also really as part of, I think that saying is older than the assassination of Beta Caceres, but it's when we all started really saying that a lot, like, you know, our resistance cannot be stopped, and if you bury one of us, we will just multiply, as you said. We are seeds. We're going to continue to grow. But yeah, I really wanted to honor her story in the book on a section that really talks about, you know, the connection between the violence against the earth and the violence against women, and how those are very old patriarchal constructs when you throw down the goddess and you throw down women and you throw down the land, and how those are all interwoven themes. And then you see these real-time, not theoretical understandings when you have this powerful woman being assassinated for her land defense, and really seeing the ugliness and violence of the current dominator society playing itself out, and the role of capitalism and extractive economies, and how they also are added to the oppression of colonialism and the project of colonialism, packed on top with capitalism to continue to have this very violent nature with indigenous peoples, black and brown communities, and the land. And we're in that story, and we're working to unwind it. But as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's like, in on the one hand, we see the death throes and the shattering and the horror of and burning of an old world, while we're at the same time summoning and bringing forth this world that we've all been envisioning for a long, very long time. And in fact, people are living it and enacting it in many different ways at different scales. And in as I see it, I think one of the things that we're doing is we have to equally, you know, fight off a lot of these powers that be, you know, the wealthy elite, and a lot of the systems that we're in of racism, capitalism, patriarchy, and colonization, while we're also really deeply envisioning this world that we know is possible. And I think we're really having to do a dance between, you know, fighting the bad, if you will, and lifting up the good. And they're both going on at the same time, and they both need our attention.
Yeah, no, that it's dangerous, and here's what we can do. And so you're proffering to us, you know, what are the many skills we most want to all cultivate now that permeates your book, you know, to best navigate and to best, you know, it's like we're in this vortex, like, and what everything that everyone does matters enormously. It's a tippy point, you know, as to what emerges from this vortex, you know, and the proffering is what's in your book, you know. It's you know, we could have a the necessary miracles of a wise culture of humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius, you know, taking again the mentorship from indigenous people, and we go, we could do this, and you mentioned the bravery of so many women throughout the world, you know, under assault, and Berta gave her life, and many, many others in Honduras, well, everywhere and in Ecuador. But speak to us of the Living Forest Declaration in the Amazon. It's so beautiful, and what you were doing there with the people who are founding the Living Forest Declaration, and how is that doing now? And do we think, you know, dire news all the way? Do we think, you know, against all odds are the odds that Trickster likes, but, you know, what Living Forest in the Amazon, take us there and what we can do now.
Yeah, I've been very, very honored for some years to have, through the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, a relationship with the Sariaco people of Ecuador, who live in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And one of the things of many, the Sariaco are quite a profound people. And I dedicate actually a whole chapter of the book to them, because I think it's so profound what they're offering the modern world. And one of the things that they've developed over, I think it must be 40 or 50 years now, is something called Calfaxacha, or the Living Forest Declaration, which you were speaking about. And they did have a formal launch of the Living Forest Declaration in the capital city of Quito some years ago, which I write about. And they brought, you know, their whole community, or a great deal of the community, to Quito and built beautiful ceremonial huts and had, you know, different workshops for several days to really make this announcement. And what it is they're rightly so stating, you know, my goodness, we indigenous people have been the stewards and custodians of our forests since time immemorial. These are living forests that we are connected to, that we are part and particle of, that we've been stewarding. And so here we have government, you know, in Ecuador, but of course this is going on all around the world with indigenous peoples and their territories, of having, you know, this Western worldview or capitalist worldview of how we should treat nature. And so then they are offered these forest management programs that are based upon a completely different worldview than theirs. And so they got together and said, you know, in their own council and said, actually, what we need to do as Indigenous people is write our own idea of what quote unquote forest management is, even though they wouldn't use those terminologies, and share what Indigenous people's view is of this forest and how we see protecting the forest. And I just was so moved by that brilliance of just turning the tables around and saying, no, actually, we should be telling you how we maintain our forests. And then people can see online Kausak Sacha or going to Living Forest Declaration, and the declaration is translated into English for people to see, and portions of it are in my book as well. But it's what's beautiful about it is it's this idea of having a political, cultural, ecological, spiritual, philosophical understanding of the forest all at once. That's what's in the declaration, very holistic view of our relationship with the web of life and the living beings of the forest, which they go into in beautiful detail of their incredible knowledge of the beings who live in the forest and the spirits who live there and how we need to care for them and how that's part of really maintaining and caring for the ecological integrity of the forest. And so, yeah, it's just a very beautiful proposal that they've written. And I'll just share one last piece of it that really touched me is that the way that they want to demarcate their land and show that the outskirts of their territories is that they've planted all these incredible flowering trees and flowering plants. And so the way that they're sharing with the world, like, this is our territory, is not through, as we know so well here, fences and borders and, you know, barbed wire to say, this is our land. Instead, it's an offering of beauty and enhancement of the land and showing life. And I just really love that that's a way of sharing where you live is through flowers and not borders and walls and violence against the land.
I love that. I love that. Around their 330,000 acres, you say.
They planted
beauty, and yeah, no, and also let's do what your book does and what you do all the time, you know, together now, which is you know, let this be eclipsed by this. We have the April 8th eclipse, you know, and it's composting, eclipsing, you know, throwing into the cauldron, you know, all of those things. And you know, when you mention you know, you're bringing up, yeah, decolonizing our imagination, going to the guiding myths in all cultures that are happily flowing together, you know, and you invoke the Inanna myth, you know, and we know that cultures symbolically embedded their science in their myths and fairy tales, and the Inanna myth is one of those. It's the astronomical cycle of Venus. So Venus will be the evening star for 9 months and then disappear into the underworld, and then Venus will be the morning star for 9 months and then disappear. And where she is right now, she's disappearing. Venus is going to the underworld right now. That's in the Cosmovision. And just for the fun of it, for your own practical magic, at the eclipse on April 8th, which is an extraordinary thing, but one of the things that happens in an eclipse is as the moon, at totality, which is like, you know, then we see the stars, and we will see Venus and Mars and Saturn. We will see what we normally don't see. We will see Venus Inanna in the underworld at the moment of the eclipse. Anyway, I just wanted to put that so you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, going, ooh, we see what we normally don't see.
I love that. I love that. Yes.
Because it's also in the West, you know, or in the Middle East, you know, Venus is Inanna. In Mesoamerica, Venus is Quetzalcoatl. And it's the same cycle. And so when Quetzalcoatl goes into the underworld with Venus Inanna now, a culture would know, oh, it's time to redefine leadership. That's what mm-hmm. it's for. And, you know, we go, it's time to read it. Yeah. So all of these, you know, guiding myths, and you delineate many cultures that still have them, and we love that. And I love that you say, you know, to state it plainly, what's happening in our world right now is not only unjust, it's insane. It's insane. Our very home is being defiled. And then you say, you know, the hubris and the systems. Rather, we are willing to use our imaginations to be alive, to thrive, to be courageous, to be uncomfortable in order to enact positive change and to strive for future generations that prioritizes social, racial, and economic justice. Yes. So that's your rousing beginning. And then just something that I deeply appreciated also, your complexity and nuance, just even in the little asterisk that you have under Anthropocene, in which you say, the Anthropocene is the current geological epoch defined by the domination of the Earth by human activity, which has affected Mother Earth's natural processes and systems. And then you say, I note that this term is not quite sufficient on its own because it flattens responsibility across all of humanity and names that the defining problem is human activity, not particular systems and structures. Anyway, that was just your little asterisk. Now go, Osprey, for wonderful delineation and high standards and liberating language. Anyway, so I love that.
I love that you love it. Thank you for recognizing it. You know, you do those things and you wonder, I wonder if everybody's going to ever read that. So anyway.
That was super great because, again, it's like, right, that takes us to words, you know, which is, again, permeates your book and again, so wonderful for all of us. And I do want to say that we are offering this so useful book. You really want it to prepare for, you know, what we have coming to us. This is the dedication. This is a book that resonates with just what we need now. And again, you can have this book as a gift for a pledge of $150 by calling 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org with many, many other wonderful things. But it is so pertinent. That's why I was like, oh, this is so resonant right now, and I'm so glad to be reading this in bed late at night because it is, you know, humming with exactly what we need. So words, you know, but, you know, you talk about Robert McFarlane. There's so many allies in this book that's also for everybody to understand. It's like, oh, there's Melissa K. Nelson, and there's Martine Prechtel, and there's many radio guests, and there's the team. We have a community. You know, you're constellating the community and introducing us to many essential people that we will name and honor. But Robert McFarlane, you said that he was, well, wordicide, right? Just as there's genocide and, you know, anything for which we have a word, we have a relationship, also permeates your book. And so he was distressed, Robert was, you write, and that the 2007 Oxford Junior Dictionary removed dozens of nature terms. So he compiled a lexicon, landmark, and this wonderful comment that you quote, smul is a word, means the opening made by an animal in the bottom of a hedge. And then he noticed that once he had the word, he noticed more and more smuls everywhere, right? So language. Language, so and you where I want to toss it to you, I mean, then you have Manikon Megan, 32 words for field, and words for tiny little things, and then you say in pre-colonial Irish the word for place is also the word for the other realm. Just to toss back to you again, this throughout, everybody effective and dedicated is a dreamer, is relating to the physical embodied quality and the invisible field and the force of spirits around it. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, as you mentioned in the title of the book, you know, this is about worldviews and climate justice. So how do we you know, blend our world of the mythical, cultural, and spiritual also with our everyday lives and the political and the current cultural context we live within. And so when I got into this section on words, I'm really approaching it from how they impact our worldview, the actual words that come out of our mouth, where they come from, what are we conjuring, what are we speaking about? You know, one of the sort of obvious ones that I think many of us talk about is how instead of talking about a particular forest or the name of a river, we'll say resources, you know, these resources. Yeah. And immediately, instead of having an animate cosmology, we have this dead matter world that we can extract from. And I think those things are completely related. And so how we talk about the living earth, how we talk about one another, how we work to decolonize ourselves, how we have an anti-racist language, absolutely matters in terms of how we think and feel and experience life. And so this really excited me. I really love these chapters on language and how where language comes from, how we also need to learn to reimagine and practice and regenerate an earth-enhancing, earth-loving language. I think that's part of our political practice, actually, as well as spiritual practice, is how to actually choose our words carefully or learn ancient words that bring us back into relationship with the land and just be very attentive to what we're conjuring when we open our mouth. And then there's also these very magical components, as you were mentioning, like I loved also when I was studying Robert McFarland's work about something that is, it's called Rinach Ma'im, which refers to the wandering shadows of clouds that are carried along by the wind on a sunny day. And then there's this word yet. It is the custom of leaving quartz stones in waterways at night where they shimmer under the moon and entice the salmon. So it's a way of going fishing. And I mean, these are, you know, just beautiful ideas and concepts. And then, and that also change how we see the world and also the magical aspect of nature, which, you know, how we have drawn out of our current context so often. And then I'll give one last example that I think also is to get into this point more deeply is when I was traveling in the Czech Republic many years ago, it was Czechoslovakia at the time. I was with my Czechish friend who's an artist, and we started talking about language, and he was sharing with me that the older Czechish language really is a language connected to the land, and especially as an example, when you talk about the months of the year. So like January, Leyden is ice, and February, Unar is hibernation or ice lowers. March is Bretzen, birch or sap. And then April is Dubin, which is when the oaks come out. And May is Kvetin, when the blossoms and the flowering time comes. And I won't go on and on, but it's just the naming, even the naming of the month can then tie us into our human relationship with the land or our observation of what's happening in nature. Because I know when I say January or February, March, you know, of course I'm aware they go back to ancient gods and goddesses, but I don't really have that direct connection because, you know, January is not the actual name of a deity. So there's not really something that ties me back into the cycles of the earth, which is what the months are about. And so these words that, you know, all at once brought us into relationship are something I think that we can really continue to explore, research, and incorporate into our everyday speech.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. The words, the language, and I love Ally David Grimes says, you know, when Chief Marie was dying, chief of the Athabascan people, one of the last speakers of Athabascan, her fellow tribes people were worried that the language would die with her, and she was fierce. In her last breath, she goes, "No. The language comes from the earth. If you maintain your connection to the earth, the language will spring back up." That's beautiful.
I love that. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I also, just to add on one more piece about the language, I mean, I think we also have a responsibility to support, you know, these indigenous languages and how hard indigenous people are fighting to maintain their languages, to ensure that they are taught, and we don't want to lose these languages because, as many linguists have said, you know, they're windows into worlds. They are holding knowledge that can help us understand our place in the world and in the greater universe. And I think we don't want to lose those languages. And yes, they're always in the land. They're in our body, so it's not like we can ever permanently lose them. But I think also it's important to lift up the struggles for protection of languages. It's part of the colonization problem, as many of us know, was, you know, the assault on indigenous peoples in terms of not allowing them to use their language, threatening their very lives for using their languages, which is all connected to our identity and our relationship with the land. And so I think it's just a very important thing. And also how, you know, there's many scientists who have talked about the fact that some of these older languages and indigenous languages are really equip the human mind to understand physics, where we have a lot of difficulty in English describing things that are not linear, how the language of indigenous peoples or older languages from all over the world have had different ways of understanding the different realms and how they connect. And so I think our language also needs to get freed up from its linearity into expressing some ideologies that are much bigger than we tend to think of today.
Yes, yes. And then you take us all over the world. You take us to Australia and Gary Snyder being in Australia, and he's walking along with an Aboriginal elder, stories. And then he realizes, oh, there are tales that are only told while you're walking. It's like, oh, I love that. Right. So singing and the song lines, you know, I want to toss that back to you. And then you mentioned Lynn Kelly, who's a memory whisperer, memory and place, who says dream time is always here. Do you want to say more about memory whispering or song lines?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was very honored to be able to be in Australia and meet with a Aboriginal elder whose story you're beginning to tell here. And the main thrust of what I was getting at is one, you know, the incredible generosity and mystery and beauty of Aboriginal Indigenous peoples from Australia and the song lines and how they share with us how the world was sung awake through the ancestors. Mm. And that the stories are in the land, and it's true how, you know, when I was walking with Phil Prosser, who's the gentleman I'm talking about, the elder who I met in Australia, and how we went to a place that's very sacred to his people, and every stone, every plant, every little bend in the river has its story and how it came into being, and very powerful teaching stories also that are in the land that remind us of how to have good conduct with the land. So, you know, it's not just sort of a story maybe about, you know, that an event happened at this certain location, though that's certainly also true, but also specific teachings about how to live in good conduct with the forest or with the mountains or how to take care of that waterway are also embedded in that place. So we hear the history of the place and the things that that place loves and the offerings for that place, as well as how to walk in a good way and maintain the ecological integrity of that place. So it's just so rich to look and see how the stories are in the land and the land is teaching us and that carrying on of that tradition. And then in that same chapter, I actually go to a story that also connected me to some of my own ancestors in Europe. You know, to show also how some of the ancient mythological tales and fairy tales, as you were mentioning earlier, in even the dominant culture still carry some of those roots about where the stories are in the land and some of those reciprocity understandings and relationships with the land. They're still there. You just have to really dig for them and be on the land and listen.
And hazelnut trees that you said European ancient indigenous people planted, you're saying, you know, these are stewards of land in every culture. You know, they didn't leave it alone. They worked with it. And the planting of hazelnut trees is just a wonderful thing to know.
Yes, absolutely.
So, even in English, you know, our word dream comes from Old English word dreamon, which meant two things, to dream and to make music. Same word, right? So it's what's running through your book too. So to make music is a way of participating in dreaming the world into being, which you and many of your allies say and remind us, going, oh yes, that's really good. Yeah, the dream time, the many ways to participate, many ways to, and then and you said also that, you know, your own organization, We Can in the Congo, as nurseries are growing more than 25 types of trees. And do you want to paint that image for us with words so we can support it further? Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up. There's a lot of practical application about We Can, and we haven't really gone into that a lot. So let me just share one story, which is, you know, all these ideas we're talking about for me is also how do we apply them directly into the work we're doing. So in the DR Congo, we're very fortunate to work with our weekend coordinator, Nima Namadamu, who is just an incredible force of nature herself. And for about 8 years now, we've been reforesting the Atombe region, which was completely decimated through slash and burn techniques. And so we, years later now, we've planted hundreds of thousands of trees, all done by women. Mm. There's about 1,000 women in the program who are planting the trees, building the nurseries. There's no modern infrastructure there. There's no roads. 25% of the trees are for human use, and 75% are going back to rewild the land so that we can regenerate the land. And in the process of doing this, which has been really beautiful and so powerful for the women, is that their social status has increased because they're the ones leading this project. And then nearby is 1.6 million acres of old growth rainforest, which we're protecting. And now that we've been in the project this long and there's enough trees that we've grown for human use, we're protecting 1.6 million acres of the old growth forest so that it remains there as intact for climate mitigation and, you know, protection of more biodiversity. And then the other thing that's been very exciting is that 8 years in, which I did not expect, is just the power of Mother Earth herself. We've planted enough trees that it has brought moisture back to the land. The rains are coming back. And so I'm really watching the entire biome change, the whole ecology of the region, through the fact that the trees are calling back the rain. And now there's all these, the natural forces coming back, in addition to the trees we're planting from the nurseries. You know, Mother Earth is regenerating herself because of the incoming rain. And it's just such a beautiful project, and seeing these women grow, have pride in their work, be acknowledged, and then the healing of the land herself.
That's beautiful. And again, throughout this fantastic book, which is a guide through forever, but especially now, the story is in our bones, how worldviews and climate justice can remake a world in crisis, by our wonderful ally, Osprey Oriel Lake. We want it to be everywhere. We want it to be in every library. We want it to be in schools. We want it to be everywhere. But you can do double duty by pledging $150 to KPFA, and you will get this book as a thank you gift, 800-439-5732. Receive this praise, Oriel, because you are indefatigable. And I always remember Robert Bly saying, you know, the young women used to gather around Mary de la Sour, this great older woman poet, just to feel themselves etched against her dedication. And your book, which is very you narrating, it's like, I want to feel myself etched against your prodigious dedication and effective engagement. It's like, oh, very inspiring, very inspiring. Thank you very much. You know, and micro and macro, you know, your own composting and gardening, and then also back in the DR Congo, I think, don't you help somebody plant a pollinator garden that they then are viewing as they die?
Yes, that's a story about my mother that's in the book, about how my sister and I cared for her when she was dying of cancer over a couple of year period, and we grew a pollinator garden, as you mentioned, something she really wanted to do, and we made this pollinator garden. And then what I hadn't realized is the place that she had chosen to do the gardening was right outside her window. So as she, you know, became bedridden, she could watch that, and that relationship of, you know, her passing to the spirit world, and then also giving life to all these bees and, you know, bats and hummingbirds, and, you know, just that cycle.
That's inspiring too, right? I had conflated, that's your mother, not the Congo. Right, well, I have so many sticky notes poking out of your book, going, there we go. So it's also the micro. It's like, we can do that. We can grow a pollinator garden, and we can also engage in these larger things. And then you end, you know, with maps, which is a kind of words, right? Living in relationship to place, and very much, you know, the earth is speaking. Let's listen to her clarion call to galvanize. And I guess you're very, you go opportunity. To open a portal, right? It's an opportunity to open a portal. And then just to toss back to you, you know, the guiding right now says, you know, irresistible eloquence be available to all who want to open the portal to listen to earth and be guided and to humbly, I mean, yeah, words, right? The word human comes from humus, dirt, from which we get humble. We're meant to be humble people in the dirt, and you're doing it. you're really doing that. So there's so much. Is there, I'm going to reluctantly release you to Kahoot and magnetize pledges to the station. But if there's anything you want to say about, you know, your work and KPFA and why it's important to have community radio so that we can hear the stories that are in our bones and wake up to participate with all parts of us, you know, our engaged activism with imagination, with dreaming. So is there a blessing, a wish, a woof that you would want to waft out to the world and also just to, you know, to go, yay, KPFA?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, Caroline, it is always such an honor to have a conversation with you. And I just feel very humbled to be having this talk with you. And so thank you. And you're just such a incredible leader that I know that the world is such a better place with your storytelling. And so what I would say, too, is we are all around the community fire. We need places to be at the community fire. And KPFA is one of those places where, you know, all the program here has continued to be in alignment with a lot of us who can't find any other media sources that are in alignment with what we want to thinking, what we want to be thinking about and talking about. So I definitely am a fan of KPFA and the programming here because we really need it. Or how do we connect in community? You know, beyond obviously our families and our immediate friendship circles, it's important that we can mix up ideas and to be in public discourse together. And this is one of the greatest places to do that. So I sincerely do support this drive that's going on. And, you know, my message to everyone is to, you know, I know everyone is going through different phases. This is not an easy time for a lot of folks. And so we need to be in community. And, you know, I hope that people get a sense of not being alone and being together, and that we all need to roll up our sleeves. And the more we act, the better that we feel and the better that Mother Earth will be. And frontline Indigenous Black and Brown communities need our support, especially in centering them right now. And so, yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for having me, and let's continue on with this good fight and also this good imagining of the world that we want.
Yes, and let's meet around the story fire whenever the path opens.
Yes,
that's great.
Thank you.
All right, I reluctantly release you for more conversations in the soon future at the perfect time. Thank you so much, Osprey Oriole Lake. Yeah,
thank
wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's great. So team, I have some people to thank. That's wonderful. Yes, I can do this. Right. So first, we know that the story is in our bones is available for a $150 donation. It's very resonant exactly with everything. I mean, as you read it, you go, right, I am an animist. I do talk to things. I do talk to the stones. And that this is part of our effective strategy. You know, and we know that also for any amount, you give any amount, any whimsical amount of any donation, you get the 75th anniversary of, you know, KPFA's highlights, Paul Robeson, Rashid Khalidi, Alan Watts, you know, Bell Hooks, Bill Mandel, many, many great people. You know, for $100, you get the 100-year war on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi. For $150, you get the history of modern Palestine by Ilan Pape. All of this is super, super pertinent and worthy. For a contribution of $200, you know, you get the 1,300 hours of history-making voices contributing to community. Really super wonderful. So by calling 800-1-800-800-439-5732, or online kpfa.org, which is, you can see a plethora of many, many thank you gifts. The Gaza Kitchen for a pledge of $150, many, many wonderful things. So Yes, Voices That Changed the World by Pacifica Radio Archives for a pledge of $200. Steve in Sausalito, thank you, bless your hearts. There's some favorite shows, The Vision Activist Show, The Herbal Highway, The News Behind the News, Letters in Politics, you know, anyone. Barry in Scotts Valley, California says, happy 27th birthday. Been listening from the beginning and continue to feel that you're a force of nature yourself. Ah, may it be so. Although I am humbled by our guest, really. You know, Osprey Oriole Lake, indefatigable, planting trees, planting gardens everywhere, out there, you know, addressing, you know, well, humbly connecting with the communities in order to protect the earth with innovative programs. And it's like, well, with all of my favorite guests, like Diana Beresford Kroger, who's keeper of, you know, steward of the trees in Canada, you know, even when we interviewed her surrounded by fire, she's like, no, we can do this. We can do this. And the story is in our bones, how worldviews and climate justice can remake a world in crisis. It's like, yeah, we look at the danger. It's real. We must not avert our gaze from the danger and the horror and the grief. And then we can do this. You know, all the brave women who were killed in Ecuador, in Honduras, and all over the world, you know, defending the earth. But they hand a baton, you know, Berta Cáceres did not die, she multiplied. And may that multiplication happen in all of our charts, all of our hearts and charts. You know, and just to weave a little bit about the power, I didn't mention this to Osprey, but just knowing her birthday, her son's at 19 Leo, the image for that is Zuni Indians perform a ritual to the sun. We go, that's kind of perfect. And then right now, here we are, the Sun and Saturn conjoined, Saturn right on top of where Neptune was when Berta was assassinated. Its image is aviator master of the high realm sails across the skies, setting in motion projects that will benefit the next seven generations. That's for us. That's for us. And so a dedication, which also is a pledge, a dedication and a pledge to this community radio station, 800-439-5732, is very powerful. And Saturn at 9 Pisces, this powerful dedication that hums with Berta Cáceres' dedication, and all people who are still alive and all people who died defending the earth are humming, are part of our community. And it exactly trines the moon at 9 Scorpio, one of my favorite degrees. That's image fellowship supper reunites old comrades. That's us. And it's also what this country is supposed to be. You know, if you look at the back of a $100 bill, there's a clock tower on it with a specific time. And if you do a chart for America using that time, it gives 9 Scorpio rising. So the soul of this country is present here now in what it should, wants to be. Fellowship supper reunites old comrades. We go, yeah, may that be for all of us. And, oh, thank you, Anonymous in Forestville, who says, hi, Caroline. Sometimes your show strikes me as the only hopeful note in a symphony of valuable information on KPFA, given the state of the world and the country. We need more of that more than ever. Woof. We go, yes. Woof, woof. Woof, woof. So yes, team, let's do well. Let's hum the airwaves. Let's move. Saturn is quintile Uranus. That takes us to the power of now and the power of what we're moving into and why this book is so pertinent and heartening. Again, a clear gazing at danger and horror, and here's what's going on. Here's what people are actually doing. You know, here's tangible things, beauty that's being made. You know, and we go, right, we're lining up for that. It's so important what all of us do now, how we dedicate. You know, our inner dedication and our outward pledging to whatever it is we value, may it be KPFA, may it be the Visionary Activist Show, you know, that inner dedication hums our outer signal, so we're more likely to be danced into place with those with whom we share a dedication. And that's part of what we put out to, and thank you, Omer and San Anselmo. Thank you, Caroline. A lovely magic amount to donate. Yes, any amount that you donate is completely, completely welcome. Again, for the story is in our bones, how worldviews and climate justice can remake a world in crisis. Yes, for a $150 donation by calling 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Any amount, you get the 75th anniversary collection of Paul Robeson and Rashid Khalidi and Alan Watts and Bill Mandel and bell hooks, and it goes on and on and on. A contribution of $200, you get 1,300 hours of history-making voices contributing to community. It's pretty wonderful. And Peter J. Says, how wonderful. Please say Peter J. Thank you. He pledged for the land in our bones. Oh, a different thing. The land in our bones. Plant ancestral herbalism and healing cultures from Syria to the Sinai by Leda. Oh, well, that's cool. The story's in our bones, and the land is in our bones. It's a theme. Anyway, thank you very much, Peter J. Let's hum. Just because everything's speaking to us, the mythological news, just to honor everything, you know, the multi-layered quality that hums in us, just as, you know, Osprey Oriole's book, The Story is in Our Bones, we also say we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and DMT. We have endogenous receptors for myth and animism and guiding stories. You know, decolonizing. I just say again the Thai saying, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. We were invaded, but not colonized. So again, that quickening up, going, right, how do we partner with the earth and how do we humbly, you know, resonate with those who have never lost their animism, wedded to their dedication. That's the winning combination. It's the trickster medicine of wheel and deal with coyote and raven and seeds that sprout after cataclysm. Oh, and thank you, Joanne in Aptos, California. Visionary Activist Show is so inspiring and informative. I'm grateful to Caroline Casey for sharing these wonderful guests with the public. Thank you back at you. That's wonderful. So join Joanne and Anonymous and Peter J. and Omer and Anonymous and again and Barry and it goes on like that, our teammates. So step up. So, you know, again, any amount is most welcome and you get many thank you gifts for that. The Story is in Our Bones is especially worthy. For a pledge of $150, you get The Story is in Our Bones, How Worldviews and Climate Justice Can Remake a World in Crisis. And we go, right. Wonderful, wonderful. So there's so much brewing, you know, and just, you know, just raise your hand if you would like irresistible eloquence on behalf of what you love. There you go. It's available for download. Raise your hand and move to the phone. Move your hand to the phone to call 800-439-5732. You know, pledge if, well, you can have irresistible eloquence no matter what on behalf of, you know, in accord with the profundity of each person's dedication. But it's even more fun to do a twofer, you know, to do I dedicate and I pledge. There we go. Everything sacred made so by our dedication. And that's part of what we're up to also, which is even and especially the realm of politics, let's make it sacred. Let's just define politics as dedication to collective community well-being. You know, and this station, let's say that it is dedicated to community collective well-being. Oh, there we go. That's really wonderful. So, yes, to read about what's going on in the Amazon and how it can be saved against all odds, you will find that in the first part of Osprey Oriole Lake's book, The Living Forest Declaration. Powerful words from indigenous leaders really all over the place, from all over the world, that resonate in our hearts, in which we go, yes, this is it. It's effective. And we say the trickster medicine is the sine qua non because it renders all the other dedications possible. And right now, you know, this time of dedication says if we entertain the possibility that we're moving it into an amplified potential renaissance, resonating, increased serendipitous synchronicity field, if we entertain that possibility, then what's the quality, what's the texture of what we want to connect with? So each dedication, each pledge is a kind of honing of our signal. And then just to honor, not in passing, but the profound mystery of Aaron Bushnell lighting himself on fire on the steps of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Covert Action magazine wrote a beautiful thing on that. But then the mythology, too. We don't have a birthday for him, but 1999, Neptune was at 2 Aquarius. That's where Pluto will station. The image for that is a deserter from the military following their own wilderness path. And we go, all honor to you, Aaron Bushnell. And may that hum around the world, you know, that everyone put down their weapons, that all are deserters from the military, following their own wilderness path back to the earth. Wilderness path, right? To leave the military and go and return to nature. And that's great. So thank you, John and Santa Rosa, Wolf Wolf, all allies of freedom, community, and music. The story is in our humming bones. Thanks, Caroline and Osprey. Thanks to you, John. All right, we're still in the modest realms. We're in the modest realms. Every dollar, every dedication, every prayer is wonderfully well met. And then our strategy, to gather our strategy. This is such an opportune time. In our hearts, we know that's true. You know, so that everything that everyone does, you know, a friend of mine says, we worship whatever we spend our money on, regardless of what we say. You know, we worship whatever we spend our time on, regardless of what we say. And we go, okay. So again, this is a community radio realm. This is a wonderful Pacifica, goddess of nature. You know, this is a rousing time where it's so essential that we meet here to share these stories. Did you know about this going on? Did you know about this horror? Yes, we do. Let's delve more deeply into the horror. Like, whoa, and then here's what good people are doing. We know that precedes, there we go. So encouraging, exhorting, you know, to dial 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org with a plethora of wonderful thank you gifts. We're primarily touting the stories in our bones, how worldviews and climate justice can remake a world in crisis by Osprey Oriel Lake, our splendiferous guest this hour. But, you know, again, you can have many, many, many things and many things that are given to you as a gift for a pledge of anything. Come on, team, anything. Just put $5.55 in there or $5.50. All fine. That's when you get the 75th anniversary collection of voices and many other wonderful things. Yeah, singing the song lines, singing the world into being. You know, all of these things are surfacing now for us to avail ourselves and partner with. So absolutely. So we're almost on our way out. It would be great to have a little burst of some hilarious, generous, Jupiterian, philanthropic. We craft our vessel of dedication and Jupiter says, we will fill it. So let's fill the coffers of KPFA so that it has more than it needs, windfalls of wherewithal for the community. Windfalls of wherewithal for the community. That would be super splendid. Okay, thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Woof, 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 woof. Arr, woof. Keep calling 800-439-5732. Pledge on behalf of your dog. Woof. Available to us. Thank you.